they need to install a wallet like MetaMask or Coinbase wallet.
Yeah, if they forget the password in these 24 words, the money is gone.
And by this time, they're like, why am I writing 24 words on a piece of paper?
I'm doing this futuristic crypto thing with a pen and paper.
Goran Torvaker, the founder of Indoors.
And the CTO of Bizen, a decentralized social media ecosystem enabling creators and users
to fully own and monetize their content.
He is also the first person who officializes his marriage on the Ethereum blockchain in 2016.
We want to build a new LinkedIn on the blockchain, but we want to avoid all the problems that LinkedIn has right now. We grew that meetup from like 5 people sitting in a pub, sitting in a bar, to like 2,000, 3,000 people at the end of the last bull run. We believe that all your skills, all your credentials, all your degrees have to be immutable. They can be proven on the blockchain and they can actually tell you who you are as a person, who you are as a professional. Some people's posts are really valuable. Let's say you have a celebrity who posts something and that post becomes really viral. That post could be sold as an NFT.
Kim Kardashian posts something. Yeah. It has a lot of likes and a lot of eyeballs. It becomes valuable. Or is it still valuable the moment it kind of like reach peak virality and then it's just there?
I've been at Indoors for 7 years as a founder, but I have worked on so many projects over the time. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work. I'm proud of what I've built. I'm proud of the stuff I've done here. I've learned so much. I want a place where I can showcase that, where I can showcase my amazing achievements.
And failures too.
And failures too, yes.
Okay. How are you feeling?
I'm good. Yeah, I landed at 7:30 in the morning.
Did you sleep on the plane?
Yeah, I managed to sleep, but it's not deep sleep. It's like...
No, it doesn't count.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm used to it. I keep saying that I'm used to it, but...
Do you travel a lot?
Yeah.
You're used to it, but you're not used to it.
I used to. Not in COVID, man. Not in COVID, I didn't travel anywhere for like 2 years. I was not traveling.
Yeah. Where were you based during COVID?
London.
Are you in London already? Okay.
I didn't go anywhere.
How do you deal with this jet lag thing?
I used to deal better with it when I was younger, but now I'm getting older, so.
So you arrived this morning. Did you sleep a bit or?
Yeah, I slept for like half an hour.
Half an hour. Power nap.
Power nap, then took a shower.
I can see you fresh. Good to see you in person.
Yeah, same here.
So maybe let's start with a bit of your background. Mm-hmm. What led you to being the person you are today, building this Bizen ecosystem in crypto?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Gorang. I'm the CEO and CTO and co-founder of Indoors, actually. Indoors, yeah. That's the company. It's like a blockchain development studio. And we started this company about 7 years ago in 2017. And since then, we have worked on numerous projects in the blockchain space. So right from NFTs to DeFi to token sales to... You know, you name it. We have, Web3 games. We have worked on all of those projects. And personally, I'm a software developer by background. And I got into the Ethereum space because I wanted to write smart contracts. Unlike other people who came to Bitcoin first, I came to Ethereum first because I was really attracted by the concept of smart contracts. Because, you know, the way you could write code on the blockchain, that concept just got me into the space, you know.
How did you discover it?
So actually it was one of the first Ethereum meetups in London. Vinay Gupta, who is one of the co-founders of Ethereum, he was talking about, blockchain and all these things. I knew about Bitcoin before then. I had read the Bitcoin white paper, but I didn't really, you know, get into it because Bitcoin was only about money, right?
You couldn't build anything on the top.
Yeah. I couldn't build anything. And then when Vinay was talking about it, he was talking about like building Airbnb on the blockchain, building some other apps on the blockchain. And that really, you know, that just clicked like a light in my head. And since then, I just got into the space. I also became the co-organizer of Ethereum Singapore meetup at that time. We grew that meetup from like 5 people sitting in a pub, sitting in a bar to like 2,000, 3,000 people, 10,000 people even at the end of the last bull run, you know.
But not in one place, right? You mean like the online community?
No, just the Ethereum Singapore meetup. It was the second largest meetup in the world, actually.
Okay, but when you would organize an actual meetup, how many people would show up?
At
the height of the bull run.
At the height of bull run, when Vitalik came, that was in early, I think, 2017 or 2018. We had 400 people in a small room. And the capacity was like 150 or 200 people. People were standing in a queue outside and we were like standing like bouncers at the door and we were like really small nerds, you know.
I can imagine the nerds camping during the night outside. No, it's not the next iPhone. It's the Ethereum meetup with Vitalik coming.
And you know, half the people didn't, even I didn't understand half of what he was talking about, because he was talking about sharding and all those things at that time.
Sharding, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Blockchain was just coming up. Ethereum had just launched the year before and no one knew what is sharding and all these
things. People just wanted to see his pretty face, his nerdy, pretty nerdy face and his pink clothes. So you got into crypto, not through Bitcoin, as you said, but through Ethereum.
Yep.
And which is like not that common. I mean, there is some people like you, but usually people start with Bitcoin first. But also you got in crypto because you wanted to build and you understood the smart contract potential.
Yeah, exactly.
And not for the money.
Yeah.
Which, because usually it's the money that attracts people first. They're like, oh, I see this thing. Even people who are very technical. Oh, I see this thing going up and down. I want to make money quickly. I'm going to buy this. And then I'm going to get interested because it's going up and down like crazy, right?
No, that's
so
what
for you was really the building side.
Yeah, I bought Ether, which was very early in like 2016, 2017. I bought Ether because I wanted to deploy smart contracts on the blockchain.
How much was the
ETH? It was like $1 or less than that.
ETH at $1.
Yeah. But I was like a stupid guy. I didn't know it was going to be worth so much, right? So I'm like, yeah, $1. I was deploying smart contracts. I was giving it away in meetups to people to understand, you know. We actually used to give away Ether and Bitcoin to people at that time, just to help them, you know, get on the blockchain. We used to give away like 0.01 or 0.05 Ether to people. It was quite common at the time.
Like, hey, when is that? Probably most of them lost them and are still looking for it today. And like, man, that would be worth like 5K.
Yeah.
Actually, in 2014, I was in Madrid doing an MBA and we had an entire week on Bitcoin.
Really?
And at the end... Yeah, we had an entire week on Bitcoin and no one believed in it. Obviously, and the students were like, I would just think like, how do I understand this thing? So I was just thinking, oh, so I'm Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
So from a countryside, and in the village where I come from, there is that one dude who like made it in life according to our parents and everything, because he was working for Credit Suisse as a banker.
Oh, wow.
He was 30 years old and we were all like, 21, 22, you know, the classic path.
He's
working for Credit Suisse, has a great job, a great pay, etc. So obviously me, I'm thinking I'm going to have a Skype with this dude from Madrid to Switzerland to understand what he thinks about Bitcoin, because he's in banking, he should understand, right? And the guy is like, doesn't make sense. There's no central bank behind it. So you can't regulate the supply and it doesn't make sense. Obviously I came back as a proud guy, just like repeating what he had told me, oh, this is all shit and everything. And at the end of that week, we had a 1 hour speech from a guy called Felix Moreno de la Cova, who was CFO of Xapo.
Oh, wow.
And he was actually making people set up wallets and sending, he was like, the first five people who download this wallet, I send you some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And he was doing it live. And he was like, oh, look, you have the Bitcoin now.
Exactly.
And the people obviously remember that. And that's how I got into crypto 4 years later. I remembered that dude.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to go and back to Madrid and talk to this guy.
Yeah. You know what we used to do? Sometimes we used to print out private keys as QR codes on small pieces of paper and used to give it away. Like each private key had like,
I actually learned about that.
0001 Bitcoin or something. Yeah.
I learned about that yesterday. The paper wallets. Yeah, I didn't know about that.
It was quite common in meetups at the time, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, you have like the public key outside and the private key inside, and it sounds like so
crazy, right?
Crazy. even the cold wallets today, if you think about it, is probably much better than paper wallets. But still, like, for normal people to use, it's nonsense.
No. My parents can't use it.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
What do you think of as a builder, someone who builds infrastructure of like all this ecosystem? We're going to talk about one specific ecosystem later. What do you think about the progress of user adoption? I mean, the user experience.
Yeah. The UX has been horrible and it is still horrible. And that's what I'm seeing, right? Like my father, my mother, like they trade crypto, they buy some crypto sometimes, but I tell them to go on Coinbase and just keep it on Coinbase because, you know, I don't want them to deal with those 12 or 24 word, you know, seed phrases and all that, because if they lose those things.
Do they hold crypto?
It. Yeah. My mother-in-law was shilling Polygon to me, Matic to me,
Really?
3 years ago. Yeah.
Okay. How come?
Yeah, my whole family is in crypto. My wife works at MetaMask, actually. So I got everyone down the rabbit hole.
Difference between wife and mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Talking about Matic, I mean, Polygon a few years ago.
Yeah, because in India, it was a big thing at the time and everyone was talking about Matic.
Okay, so she's based in India still. And okay, obviously the team is from India. And okay. So basically it was the in investing, what we call the home bias, right?
Yeah,
you invest in your own country only. And you there's this new crypto. Actually, the thing did amazingly well.
Yeah.
There's this new crypto in India. Let's invest in that. And she ended up outperforming you massively.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I don't know what Matic, you know. I don't know. Yeah. She made a lot of gains on that. Good for her.
Yeah. Continue.
No, good for her, I'm saying.
Yeah, good, very good for her.
Yeah.
You said, you told me you are the first person who got married on the blockchain.
No, I wrote my prenup on the blockchain. So my co-founder actually wrote his marriage certificate on the blockchain. So I wanted to do something different. So I wrote my prenup on the blockchain. And I was the first one in the world to do it.
Do you have a normal prenup?
No,
it was just
like
for fun, prenup on the blockchain. So
like
you don't have to go to your wife to explain, hey, this is just for fun on the blockchain, but it's actually, blockchain is not the reality. It's,
yeah,
it's all in the matrix. So it's okay. Don't worry.
So we had like really funny clauses in there. Like if I watch Walking Dead with her, if she watches Walking Dead with me, I'm going to watch Seinfeld with her, all these kind of things. Or we have to keep the room temperature only at 23 degrees.
Okay,
all
you
night.
Wrote all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah. We wrote all these clauses actually. Some really like prank or we have to go on a date night every 15 days, you know, things
every
like 15
that. 15
days. Yeah.
Which
we still do that.
Which you still do.
Yeah.
So one thing, is there something else from the prenup that you still do?
The temperatures.
Temperature for sleep or for house or?
Yeah, for the house. Like it has to be like 23 degrees.
Who decided that?
She's.
How do you think about that?
I don't like it, but you know, it's written on the blockchain. So
immutable, can't be changed. Warmer? You prefer warmer or colder?
I want colder, yeah.
You want colder.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the temperature in this room?
It's a bit hot.
It's
yeah.
a bit hot, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's okay, yeah, lights and all that.
Too many brains in this room, too much creativity
energy,
going
yeah.
on. Energy, good energy, positive energies. Amazing.
Words.
Okay, so you talked about indoors, right? Since 7 years. So how did the company start?
So before indoors, we were doing another startup called Atorus, and we were doing diplomas on the blockchain.
Diplomas on the blockchain. Okay.
So we worked with Neon Polytechnic and did a pilot with them. So we helped them issue degrees for one of their batches on the blockchain.
Mm.
And since then, the government kind of took over that project. And right now in Singapore, all degrees and diplomas are issued on blockchain, like all schools, all universities. And we kind of did the ideation for that, I would say.
Why is it useful or even important for degrees or diplomas to be deployed on the blockchain?
So I think it starts with your degrees, which is like your credentials on the blockchain, right? And after that, what they want to do is they want to create like a whole backpack, digital backpack. What they mean by that is not just your degrees, but all your credentials, all your skills, they will go on the blockchain. And I think that's mm-hmm. the future. And that's one of the products we are building. I'll talk about that by hand afterwards. We believe that all your skills, all your credentials, all your degrees have to be immutable. They can be proven on the blockchain and they can actually tell you who you are as a person, who you are as a professional. Yeah.
Do you want to develop on that? Let's talk about that now.
Sure.
We can talk about the other parts of the ecosystem later. Talk about Bizen because it makes a lot of sense based on what we just talked about.
Yeah, so Byzant, we are building a new social media app based on Lens protocol.
And, what is Lens protocol?
So Lens protocol is a protocol which helps build social media apps. It could be Facebook, it could be Instagram, could be LinkedIn, something like that, right? It has all the components to build a new social media app on the blockchain, completely on chain.
So Lens protocol is sort of an iOS or an Android.
Yeah, it's
build
like Lego blocks.
Social media applications on the top that are decentralized.
Exactly.
And Lens was built by the Aave team, right?
Yes.
Stani. Okay.
So you can think of Lens like Lego blocks, right? You have these different blocks like comments, posts, your wall, your shares, your likes, your retweets, all these things. And you can pick and choose different blocks that you can use in your social media dApp. And, you know, you can build it quite easily. So we are building Byzant, which is a new professional app. So essentially, we want to build like a new LinkedIn on the blockchain, but we don't want to call it LinkedIn really. But it's kind of similar to LinkedIn, but we want to avoid all the problems that LinkedIn has right now, you know.
So sure, what?
Yeah. So if you go on LinkedIn, you get like 10 messages from recruiters saying, hey, are you looking for a job? Or are you looking for developers? We can give you developers, this and that. And if you look at all the posts on LinkedIn, they're so cringy right now. It's like, oh, I saw a dog on the road and I gave him some water and then I went to the interview. And
so LinkedIn became Facebook.
Yeah, it's worse than that. Yeah, it's worse than that. And plus, like, you're not able to get any value out of it. There's so much noise there.
Also, so everyone is a superhuman on LinkedIn.
Everyone turns
like a small everyone thing into like a life achievement because that's what it is about, right? Showing off and
not just that. So LinkedIn and I think the traditional recruitment model, it's very linear, right? It's like
Do you mean by linear?
Yeah, it's like you worked at this company for 2 years, then you worked at this company for 2 years, then you took a break for 6 months.
Yeah.
Then you worked at this company, and then the recruiter asks you, hey, why did you take a break for 6 months? Because it's a bad thing, apparently. But if you look at Web3, if you look at crypto, people like us, we might work on a project, then we might take a break, we might go to Hawaii or, I don't know, Bali, take a break for 6 months, do some surfing, and then come back and work on the next project. Or at the same time, we might be working on two or three projects as well, right? So it's not linear in Web3. And not just that, it's also about, now let's say we are going to Token 2049 tomorrow, right? We meet a new person and I say, hey, Kevin, I'm Gaurang. I own a Bored Ape or I own a CryptoPunk. I don't.
Do you? I want to ask. Do you?
I don't.
Okay. Do you own NFTs?
Yeah, I own NFTs, but yeah, I don't own CryptoPunks.
Only the shit ones. You made all the wrong decisions.
Oh, yeah.
You had the CryptoPunk and the Bored Ape, but you sold them, right? You sold them too early.
No comments. So what I'm trying to say is, let's say if you meet someone and he says or she says that I own a CryptoPunk, you immediately know that, okay, this person is an OG and they're likely millionaires. And essentially, you can form a conception or some kind of a perception about that person.
It helps
right?
you filter yeah. out the person yeah. To realize that this person is serious because either they have money and they got in late, but they still have enough money to keep it. Either they actually understood the game early, therefore they're knowledgeable about the space.
Yeah, or it's like a community thing as well, right? If you say, I own a Bored Ape, you own a Bored Ape, let's go for a beer
friends,
afterwards,
okay.
you know? Yeah,
yeah absolutely.
It's not just that. Like, so in Web3, a professional profile, it's not just the jobs you've done. It's not just the breaks you've taken. It's not just the NFTs you have. But it's also about the events that you go to, right? So you and I, we are going to the same side event.
Yeah.
That means we are in the same circle. We know the same kind of people. And all these things, they combine together to make your professional profile. And that's what we want to showcase on Byzant.
So all these things should be showed up. So you can basically match people much easier. Either they see that, we have a lot of different common
things.
Much more than we would know if we're just looking at LinkedIn, because obviously a lot of these things, for example, some people do it, but like having a CryptoPunk profile picture on LinkedIn.
No.
Right now, you can do it if you don't need any job or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, I'm just going to kind of troll LinkedIn, but like, it's really not the place for that, right?
Exactly. On Byzant, you can showcase your NFTs. You could showcase the events you're going to. You can showcase the AMAs you're attending or you're conducting. You can showcase your skills. You can showcase your projects. So it's not a linear thing. We want to build a place where you can showcase and highlight the awesome things about you. So it's kind of like Instagram for professionals. So essentially, think about it, right? If LinkedIn was built in 2023, how would that be?
So yeah, that's and LinkedIn was built in what, 2003?
Yeah,
20 years ago?
20 years ago almost, yeah. It hasn't changed.
It hasn't really changed.
Kind
it's
of
true.
The same, right? Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of customers, it's kind of sticky. So
yeah,
like,
it makes money. So.
And it's catered towards the normal world, the real world, and mostly these big companies, and these big companies, they have a very specific way of looking at people, which is very traditional and very linear, as you said, obviously.
Yeah, even like, let's say, even like women, if they take maternity leave, they see like a 6 month, 9 month break, and sometimes recruiters don't like it, you know. And in crypto, it's not like that. It's like, okay, you worked on this project, amazing, I want to hire you, right? So let's say if you meet a person who was a marketing director at Bored Apes, you want to hire that damn person, right? Because you want that person in your company. It's as simple as that, you know.
Even if he worked for 1 year and then he didn't work for 3 years.
Exactly.
If he was, I can see you were in the inception of like Bored Ape and you marketed this thing and then you made so much money that you could just chill for a few years.
Yeah,
I want you.
Yeah.
So it's much more, I mean, it's basically a social media, professional social media network that reflects much more the crypto ethos, which is meritocracy over years of experience and...
bullshit like that.
All this stuff. Do you feel that your own life reflects more crypto ethos or
the
classic LinkedIn path?
No, absolutely. I've been at Indos for 7 years as a founder, but I have worked on so many projects over the time. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work. But I'm proud of what I've built. I'm proud of the stuff I've done here, right? And I've learned so much. And I want a place where I can showcase that, where I can showcase my amazing achievements.
Right. And failures too.
And failures too, yes. Yeah, for example, I wrote an EIP, which I'm really proud of. I wrote an EIP, like a new standard about interoperable NFTs.
What is an EIP for people who don't
EIP
understand?
EIP is a Ethereum Improvement Proposal. So essentially, NFT. So ERC-20, the tokens.
Yes.
That was an EIP before it became ERC-20. NFT is ERC-721. That was also an EIP.
So it's basically the same as when you want to have a new law, for example, in... The democracies, some people can come and say, hey, I'm going to propose this thing and then we're going to vote on it. And if it's accepted, it's going to become a law, right?
Exactly.
So you can do the same on Ethereum with EIPs that become ERC tokens. Like, do we
ERC
say that?
Standards, ERC standards. So for example, I wrote that standard, but on LinkedIn, for example, I don't have any way to kind of showcase that. So
what is the standard about?
Sorry? It's about interoperable NFTs, multiverse. We call it multiverse NFTs. So NFTs that can be used on multiple metaverses, multiple Web3 games.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's...
multiple chains.
Multiple chains as well. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just one example where... I'm trying to say is...
Is it used already? Or
no,
like
so we just published it early this year and we're trying to get adoption for that. You know, there's like so many standards coming up. Some of them become popular. Some of them take time, but yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, moving on. So coming to the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So the Byzant ecosystem, it's not just about one social media app. It's like an ecosystem which has four pillars. The first one is the social media app itself, Byzant. The second one is a wallet, essentially a new kind of wallet called Bastion. Third one is a NFT marketplace where you can kind of sell and trade your NFTs. So with Lens Protocol, essentially everything that you do is an NFT. So your post would be an NFT. Your comments could be an NFT. It depends. So all these things could be sold on that marketplace. And all your other NFTs can be sold.
Everything becomes tradable because every NFT can be traded on a market if there is demand and supply. I mean, if there's demand for it.
Exactly. And the last thing is the we have a decentralized ad network because we just want everything to be decentralized on this network, in this ecosystem. So if you want to place any ads, if you want to buy any ads, you can place them in a decentralized fashion.
So let's start. I think for me, the most logical is the NFT marketplace. Why? Because we talked about the social media platform decentralized, where because it's on the top of Lens, everything is an NFT, right? And then you say everything can become tradable.
Yeah.
Why would people buy and sell posts, tweets, pictures?
So the idea is it's not like they need to sell it or need to buy it. But some people's posts are really valuable, right? So let's say you have a celebrity coming there who posts something and that post becomes really viral. That post could be sold as an NFT, which becomes really valuable. So I think Jack Dorsey's tweet was sold as an NFT for a few million dollars.
Yeah, but bought by Justin Sun, no?
I think so.
I think so. The guy was...
Yeah.
Because my question is, okay, I understand the concept. Kim Kardashian posts something.
Yeah.
It has a lot of likes and a lot of eyeballs. It becomes valuable. But is it because someone would want to trade it from the moment it's still viral? I'm going to buy it now and sell it later because it's going to become even more eyeball. Or is it still valuable the moment it kind of like reach peak virality and then it's just there?
Yeah,
how is that valuable if it's if the effect is is done?
No, I think that's what, right? It depends on it, right? So as a buyer, as a speculator, you could think or you could speculate that, okay, whatever Kim Kardashian wrote is going to become viral. And you essentially buy it early on. Yeah. And then you could sell it for
doing that.
Yeah.
Every Kim Kardashian tweet, boom, buy, boom, sell.
So
actually makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. You could,
okay,
you might lose a few cents, but you might make a few millions. Yeah.
Interesting. What else could be done with this NFT marketplace?
So literally, it's like a normal NFT marketplace where you can sell any of your NFTs as well, where you can trade any NFTs. So it's not very special, but it's like an NFT marketplace, which is an integral part of the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want is we want people to have a seamless experience. So we essentially, they can go to OpenSea and sell it. Yes, obviously. But if they want to sell it on the ecosystem itself, they could do it very seamlessly.
Yeah.
That's okay. Where we have the marketplace.
Very interesting. Then there is a wallet.
Yes.
What does the wallet has to do with the ecosystem?
Yeah. So let me take us back to our earlier conversation about horrible UX, right?
Yeah.
So let's think about the journey of a normie who comes to crypto.
A right? Normie, a normal person, yeah. A
normal person. Yeah. This person, he or she, they need to install a wallet, browser wallet, like MetaMask or Rainbow Wallet or Coinbase Wallet.
Yeah.
That itself takes 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes. Then
what do they have to do when they install this wallet?
Yeah, then they need to create the seed phrase, the 12-word or 24-word seed phrase.
Then they
have to write it down somewhere.
24 words, not lose it.
They don't write it down, they would lose, yeah. They don't lose it.
Write down a password. If they forget the password in these 24 words, if they forget both the password and the 24 words, the money is gone.
And by this time, they're like, why am I writing 24 words on a piece of paper? Like, this doesn't make sense, right?
We're in 2023. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm doing this futuristic crypto thing, the future of the internet, with a pen and paper.
Yeah. And why? That's a... Anyway, so they do it just because we tell them to do it, right? And now they want to send some Ether to Kevin. And how do they do it? They don't have an Ether. They need to go and buy Ether. And then they realize that, oh, I need Ether to... No. Let's say they want to send you some USDC, right? So
yeah,
they have some USDC in their wallet and they can't send it right now because they don't have Ether for the gas fees. So now
exactly.
They have to go
you
and
need
buy
to
Ether.
Pay the transaction to send the dollars in ETH because it's an Ethereum-based wallet. So you need to have some ETH that you need to buy somewhere else and send to your wallet. What a nightmare.
You have to send it from your bank account, send some money from your bank, or you need to pay using a card. You have to do KYC.
And then you get completely like hammered by
fees
and everything.
How much time
have you
spent?
Yeah, like
normal
people don't do that. Like I do very few crypto transactions in crypto, very few. And every time I do them, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that quickly tonight. And it takes me an hour and a half because nothing is working. We need to change network to go to a layer two. And like it's, and then, oh, I need also gas fees on this layer two. It's a nightmare. Like, and then I don't even know where the money is anymore. And you're like, even, and I'm not too, like I've been doing crypto for what, 6 years, five, 6 years. So like, I'm not too crypto
not
stupid, but like, I'm like, man, this is stupid. Like this is, okay. So you're building a wallet that's called a smart wallet.
Smart wallet, exactly. And it's
how
based
is it smarter
on this,
than these current wallets?
Yeah, it's based on this new standard called ERC-4337. And this EIP was actually written by Vitalik and a few other people, like Christoph, who proposed this new standard for wallets, right? And these wallets are called smart wallets.
Yeah.
In reality, they are actually smart contract wallets.
Mm.
So now...
So just to recap, Vitalik Buterin, co-founder of, and kind of almost, I don't want to say CEO, but like the key figure of Ethereum,
key figure of Ethereum,
and a few other guys knew that these current wallets hot wallets like MetaMask or Coinbase wallet that we're using are very inefficient and complicated for people. So they wrote a new law on Ethereum to pass because they anticipate that we need to do something better. And that's what you're building basically on this new
standard. Yeah.
New standard. Yeah.
And each of these wallets essentially is going to be a smart contract. Now that's a very important difference. So if you look at your MetaMask wallet, you have a public-private key pair, which you see in your browser at the top. And that's just that, right? It's a public-private key pair. It can only send transactions. So it can hold Ether and send transactions. You can just do that.
Yeah.
But with a smart contract wallet or a smart wallet, it can do multiple other things. So your smart contract wallet can be a smart wallet. It can be smart. It can have logic inside it.
Can you give some examples?
Yeah. So let's start with the ownership of the wallet, right? So let's start with that. So a smart wallet could be owned by a single person, like a normal wallet.
Yeah.
Or it can be owned by multiple people, like your multisig wallet. So a smart wallet,
okay,
like inherently can be owned by multiple
people. So every time there's a transaction on that wallet, multiple people need to sign in accept like that transaction. Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Then the third option is it could have session keys. That means you could have a key or an owner for that wallet only for, let's say, like 1 day or 2 days. And then that ownership can be revoked, essentially. That's the third option.
Okay.
And there are multiple such schemes for ownership of these wallets. That's just the beginning of it. Right?
Okay.
Now, again, let me walk you through an example of like a journey of a gamer, right?
Gamer, okay.
So let's say you're
focused on gaming for the moment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm a gamer. I love gaming as well. So I can talk about this very well.
Perfect.
Yeah. So
what's the problem of gamers with current wallets and how do you solve that with a smart wallet?
Yeah. So let's consider a gamer, a normie gamer, who wants to play your Web3 game, right? Kevin, let's say you have built a really awesome Web3 game and you want people to play this game, right?
Yeah.
What you do is you do some ads on Twitter or LinkedIn or not LinkedIn, Twitter or Reddit. You get a person, not on LinkedIn. Sorry. You get a person who wants to play your game. They come to your game and the first thing you ask them to do is what? Install MetaMask.
Yeah.
And we just talked about it, how long
you
it takes
lost
to...
most people, yeah. You spend a lot of money on nice ads and people are like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. That's a stumbling block, right? You lose a lot of people there.
Yeah.
But with smart wallets, as I said, just like the multisig wallets, now you can also have a scheme where this wallet can be owned by your Google account or your Facebook account. So if you go to Amazon or something, right, or Netflix, you can say there's an option to log in with your Gmail, log in with your Facebook, log in with your LinkedIn. Similarly, for new smart wallets, there is an option to log in with your Gmail. Again, this is just one option. As I said, there are multiple options, right? There can be a multi-sig wallet, session keys, all these things. So log in with social media is just one option. Now let's take an example of your gamer. The gamer comes to your game and they see an option to log in with Gmail. That's awesome, right? They log in with Gmail.
No need to download MetaMask.
Only download
just
MetaMask.
Just use Gmail, okay?
Yeah. What happens is, when they log in with Gmail, in the background, it creates a public-private key pair, essentially like your MetaMask wallet, which becomes the owner of this wallet, new smart wallet. And your game, using our Bastion SDK, it will automatically deploy a new smart contract wallet on the blockchain for this gamer. And all this is happening in the background, right? The gamer just clicks on login with Gmail. In the background, there are 3-4 things happening. And the person gets a new smart contract wallet.
Whoa.
Voila. And now, everything that a person does, all the NFTs they own, all the rewards they're getting, they go in that wallet.
If it's linked to my email, what if my email gets hacked? That's one of the problems, for example, today with normal exchanges. We have 2FA, two-factor authentication on like, ideally another device, but like, for example, I have a Binance account and I have all my crypto on Binance. Yeah. If I don't have a Binance account. No, but like if I have a Binance account and all my crypto is on Binance and I get...
Don't say that, but...
I get my Gmail hacked.
Yeah, yeah.
I have one of my friends in Dubai. It was a few years ago, but he showed me like the screenshot of 400 Bitcoin stolen from his Binance account. So now you're linking this smart wallet with a Gmail.
Yeah.
how is this different than having a Gmail? That's because a it's Gmail,
question,
right?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, that's where these other ownership schemes can come into place. So you can have several security mechanisms there. You can have a multi-sig wallet, right? So Gmail could be just one of the signers. Your game could be the other signer. You can have someone else to be the other signer on that. So you can have multiple signers on that. You can have session keys. That means you can revoke this Gmail signing after a day and you make them sign up or create a new owner every day. So you can have multiple schemes like that, right? That's why smart wallets are flexible and smart. You can have multiple types of logic, multiple types of security mechanisms. And that's just the first step, right? So after creating this wallet, your game, Kevin, can actually pay for gas and the transaction fees for this gamer. So the gamer doesn't need to go and buy Ether to pay transaction fees or Matic or anything for that matter, right? You can pay the transaction fees for them. And you can, not just that, if the gamer actually wants to buy some Ether or USDC, they can buy them using their credit cards. That's called fiat on-ramp. So there's multiple solutions out there, multiple projects out there who help doing help with doing this, right? You can pay with your Amex or with your Visa or MasterCard, and they get USDC in their account, in their smart wallet. All this happens completely seamlessly. So in the background, everything is happening on the blockchain. But at the front, the UX is similar to the Web2 UX. And again, the beauty of smart wallets is you can have any of these pieces. You can remove any of these pieces. If you don't want, let's say, fiat on ramps, you can remove that. If you don't want the social logins, you can remove that. You can only pick and choose anything that you want. And I think that's the beauty of smart wallets, because they're going to change the UX of crypto completely. And Vitalik has written a blog post mentioning that smart wallets are going to be the standard default wallets on Ethereum in the next 3 to 4 years. So
you are at the forefront of that, basically.
Yeah. So every wallet will be a smart wallet.
Okay.
Simple as that.
Can we talk about, to finish this podcast, about fourth pillar?
Yes.
The ad network.
Yeah. So yeah, that actually brings us to the ads, right? Because most of the social media apps are actually sustained by advertisements, right?
Yeah.
And ads are important to make revenue, to do all these things. And not just that, right now as a crypto project, if you want to advertise your project, Google makes it really difficult. Facebook makes it really difficult. They keep banning your ads.
Absolutely.
They keep, you can't use the words like crypto or Web3, I don't know, some keywords, you can't use them. So we want to make it really kind of easy and really inclusive for Web3 projects to advertise their own projects. So again, we will have some, you know, blacklists. We won't let them do any scams and all these things, no Ponzi schemes, obviously. But yeah, we'll make it crypto friendly, and we want to make it completely decentralized. So this ad network will have decentralized moderation, decentralized payments, decentralized ad placement as well. So it's like a whole ad engine, similar to Google ad engine, but on the blockchain.
What does that mean? Decentralized versus a Google ads? Concretely, a decentralized ad network. What does it concretely mean?
So on Google...
Where's the money going? Token holders? What's the actual difference between... I want to do a decentralized ad network and I have Google ad network, which is owned by Google.
Exactly. So... with a decentralized ad network, it's more democratized, right? So let's talk about moderation, for example. If you want, let's say, Kevin, your Web3 game, right, wants to advertise itself on this ad network. You say that, okay, I submit this ad to the network, and then this ad needs to be moderated. Now, what happens is on our ad network, we have a committee of moderators. We have, like, let's say, a community of moderators. And any of these moderators can come and moderate your ad, and they get actually rewarded for this moderation. So essentially, that money, part of your ad revenue goes to the moderators. And again, there's like moderators of moderators. If some moderators act maliciously, we can ban them, remove them. That's just one thing, right? The placement of ad itself, it goes on multiple crypto websites, multiple, you know, social media apps and all these things. All that is done in a decentralized manner. And
does it mean that the main difference is, I mean, Elon is trying to do that more and more with Twitter.
Yes,
but
exactly.
Basically, no type of ad could be censored or banned, even the bad ones. This theoretically means that he could run his ads, I mean, he or she, without being shut down because it's a decentralized ad network, right?
Not really, because...
you have the moderators and
Yeah, that's why we have the moderators. We have the guidelines, right? So essentially, it won't be like Google, right? So we won't ban the word crypto.
Yeah.
But we will not, I don't know how the guidelines are going to take place, but we will ban obviously bad stuff and obviously harmful stuff for people.
So it can still be banned.
Yeah. Obviously, your scams would be banned, your Ponzi schemes would be banned. So anything that is bad for people will be banned. Yeah.
Amazing. Anything you would like to add?
No, I think that covers most of it. Yeah.
Thank you so much for this, Gorang. That was awesome.